Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Henrik. You are listening to Red Eyes Radio, and you are watching Red Eyes TV if you're seeing the video version of this program. Thank you so much for tuning in. It's always a pleasure to have you with us. Well, today we have Jay Dyer with us from Jay's Analysis to break down the latest situation between the U.S.-Russia relations, the proxy war in Syria, but also how the U.S. elections are going to have tremendous influence in regards to what direction that this is going to go, both from November and then going into next year with the election of the president. At least I believe so, since Trump has kind of voiced his concern over Hillary's antagonism towards Russia. He's declared that he wants to be on good terms with Russia and actually solve the ISIS problem that was more or less created by America, Israel, and of course then backed by those same forces that helped to create it. But Jay, welcome back to the show. It's great to have you with us again.
Thank you, Henrik. Pleasure to be here. I always enjoy our conversations. I think we cover some really good ground and we get really deep, more so, I think, than most conversations that I have on this topic. So I'm glad to be here.
Excellent. Very good. So let's kind of begin to talk a bit about the situation between the U.S. And Russia and take us through what you see has happened here between Russia and the U.S. in recent months and how close at this point you think we are to some kind of armed conflict between the U.S. and Russia. People are obviously fearing that the situation in Syria is going to, you know, this proxy war is going to derail completely. Or maybe derail isn't the right word. Maybe this is actually on track in terms of our globalist enemies and what they want to have seen between the U.S. and Russia. What's your take on this?
I don't think that it's completely on track. I think that the U.S. and the State Department have wanted for a good while to get rid of Assad. This goes back to 2010, 2011, when we saw the beginning of the color revolution style operations that were not very successful in Syria. I did an interview with a Russian analyst, Andrew Karibko, and we covered this very well. And he pointed out that it's because of Syrian patriotism that this has not been that successful. Now, I don't really have any concern for Assad per se. I'm not some cheerleader, but I think that he represents modernity. He represents a stable government in Syria, and that's not what the Oded Yanan plan of Israel, that's not what the State Department, Soros, and these different entities have wanted in that region. They want microstates. We know this from, you know, many. Even Wesley Clark has talked about this, former head of NATO. So it's not a secret that the U.S. wants a regime change there. And so what we're actually witnessing is a long stage plan of hybrid warfare, asymmetrical warfare, color revolution technique, swarming from the RAND Corporation, these strategies of utilizing hashtag revolutions. We saw this with the Arab Spring. That was not completely successful in Iran. It was successful in Egypt to some degree. And what we're seeing now is a later stages of that play, which is how Kissinger described it as acts of a play. And what we saw in 2010 with Egypt, I think he said this is act one of the play. And what we're seeing now with Syria is just later stages of that same theater of war. So it's not been successful because they wanted, through these different psychological operations and false news stories about Syrian Danny and chlorine attacks, and now we're seeing this with barrel bombs. These are all lies. These are all made up by Western media. And it's the same strategies and techniques we saw with Jessica Lynch, that we saw with George Bush Sr. saying Saddam's throwing babies out of incubators. It's all the same psychological operations. And what you're seeing with Dust Boy, what you're seeing with what was the name of the boy that was laying face down, right? That was supposed to be the impetus for Merkel to open, have open borders and to.
It was Alan Kurdi, right?
Kurdi, that's it. Yeah. That's it. Yeah, these are very similar style, tear jerking psyops that echo babies from incubators with Saddam. Now, Saddam, of course, was a member of the Ba'athist Party. And you go back to the 1940s and Miles Copeland's book, and the Ba'athist Party was set up by the CIA. But that was an older strategy of the CIA at that time, attempting to use Arab nationalism. By the time of the 70s, the strategy had been altered to adopt the old British model of using the Muslim Brotherhood. So I say all that because you have to understand the background of the co-opting and usage of Wahhabism and Salafism and so forth by the West. And in my view, I don't believe that there are all these rogue Islamic states or jihadi networks out there. I believe that at least since the time of the British Empire, most of these networks have been utilized and co-opted and controlled by British intelligence. And we see that with characters like Harry St. John Philby, with T.E. Lawrence. If you've ever seen the movie Lawrence of Arabia, that's roughly accurate in terms of how the British Empire carved up the Middle East. They utilized the Masonic lodges. This is detailed in Stephen Dorrell's book, MI6. So there's no secret to this stuff. This is all mainline history. And what we're seeing now is just sort of the utilization of those same networks, those same Muslim Brotherhood groups that have morphed into Mujahideen in the 70s with Brzezinski, Carter, and Gates in the Afghan War, which was designed, according to Brzezinski, to lead the Soviets into a trap. And so there's the remainder of those networks of the Mujahideen, of the Al-Qaeda, which now are rebranded as ISIS, also Al-Nusra in Syria. These are the networks that the CIA and Western intelligence agencies have run and controlled all along. And this is why in the 90s, when the Clinton administration, who is now coming back into power, unfortunately, it looks like the Clintonistas in the 90s used Al-Qaeda to bomb Serbia, right? Kosovo. They supported the Kosovo Liberation Army. That was all CIA funded. Robert Baer, CIA operative, has now said this openly. He said that they gave us millions of dollars to dissect and destabilize these countries through these proxy groups. So it's the exact same strategy, and they don't ever change it. They do the same thing over and over and over because it works, because they have a giant propaganda machine. And so what you were showing, those images of Avaaz, which is one of these Soros-created NGO groups, what you're looking at with the white helmets, this is just a fake humanitarian cover that al-Nusra uses for so-called doctor emergencies, when ISIS or al-Nusra gets bombed, they put on white helmets and say, we're humanitarians and Russia is bombing us, Assad's bombing us, which is ludicrous. But that's how it works in PSYOPs, and that's why they're staging these events and these rescuing Dust Boy and so forth. That's what's actually going on here. So what they're having to try to do is ramp up all of this media propaganda. They tried to get the Nobel Peace Prize for white helmets that bombed, I think largely because of the work of Vanessa Beely and Patrick Henningsen at 21st Century Wire, just writing constant articles calling this PSYOP out. And so it represents the new strategy of how regime changes are done. They're done through color revolution, through asymmetrical warfare, through Rand Corporation swarming, which utilizes hashtags, Twitter, and so forth, Arab Spring, Google. That's how regime change happens nowadays. It doesn't happen through the old 40s, 50s CIA style of sparking a coup and toppling the dictator. You try to do it through info war, your information warfare. In fact, there's Cambridge University just published a book that I've been reading, The Marketing of Rebellion. And in this Cambridge University, Cambridge University Press, they talk about how this is the model of, quote, activism. But if you look at the character of Gene Sharp, the professor, U.S. professor, who's obviously worked with the CIA in crafting democracy, and he talks about, and there's a whole documentary on him, about how he's written the book that is the model for democratic revolution. Now, that doesn't just apply to, quote, Democrats. The same strategy and techniques will be used by groups like Al-Qaeda or Al-Nusra. So it's really just a technology that can change its frontispiece, right? It's kind of like if you worked at a big box store and you've got an end cap, right? Every few months, the end cap changes for what product you're trying to sell. And so it's the same strategies and models and techniques. You and I have talked about this in the past with NGOs, with ISIS, with feminists, right? They'll use the same patterns and techniques domestically as well. Black Lives Matter, right? And who do we always see in the background of this? Soros, right? And so much of this has come out in the last few months about Soros's connection to all this. So I think these are all just telltale signs of what we're looking at as something completely engineered. The whole NGO complex, smart power, as it's called, the smart power complex, the new method of regime change, it's all completely transparent. It's totally obvious to anyone who's looked into this a little bit, that, you know, as you're pointing out with this video of the quote refugees, this is just population demographic warfare. So it serves a twofold agenda. They're able to get rid of Assad because he works with Russia and he vetoed pipeline projects that the West wanted in favor of Russian pipeline projects. That's a big part of this, obviously. And it also serves the agenda of displacing the European populations with all of these immigrants that they all brag about openly. I mean, this is not a conspiracy theory anymore. We know, you pointed out before, Kutuzov-Kalergi plan. Well, we've talked about Peter Sutherland. Other EU bureaucrats have bragged about it. Soros has bragged about it.
Yeah.
So we know now. It's just, it's an open secret.
Yeah, I mean, that's absolutely right. There's so many kind of angles to this that we should go into and dissect and discuss further in detail. You know, Jay, but how are you, if we just generally, in the beginning here, talk a bit about how concerned you are in terms of a Hillary Clinton presidency when it comes to Russia and the situation between Russia and the U.S.
Yeah, well, the irony here is that, you know, you go back to the 90s, and I believe that you can pretty clearly see that Yeltsin was an agent of the West. I'm not saying that the Soviets were good or that Russia was angelic or anything like that, but I believe that Bolshevism and Sovietism were exported by the West ultimately to destabilize and destroy Russia. Quigley talks about this in Tragedy and Hope. He says that this was the long-term Royal Society plan, was to export these different ideologies that ultimately would lead to two wars in the 20th century to weaken the Atlantis establishment's two main enemies. Those two main enemies are Russia and Germany. And so what did World War One and Two do? Well, they weakened and destroyed their rivals. And that was a strategy dreamt up literally by the Royal Society. And unfortunately, it worked. So what we're seeing now is kind of the mopping up. You know, Germany is pretty much conquered, unfortunately. The CIA is everywhere in Germany. U.S. bases everywhere in Germany. Not many U.S. bases in Russia, right? So
right.
Russia
yeah.
is in its last stage of being mopped up. The economy was gutted in the 90s through a lot of these KGB oligarch scumbags who were linked with the Russian oligarchs that were working with this Harvard crew that were part of the Clinton establishment, Larry Summers, Rubin, other people from the IMF. Hillary was involved in this, and what they did was they looted the country of Russia for hundreds of billions of dollars, as I understand. At least there was actually an investigation of this, a congressional investigation of the looting of Russia in the 90s. I've done an interview with Nina Kuprianova, who was there during this period, and she talks about the poverty and so forth and what they had to deal with. So this is very real, and the reason this relates to this election, you're putting up that excellent article from Taki's Mag. The author of that article made a great point. He said, look, the conspiracy theories of Hillary Clinton and the Democrats are the most ridiculous things ever about this idea of Trump and Putin being in some sort of cohort
right.
Operation to run the alt-right and destroy America. That's the most ludicrous conspiracy theory since the official story of 9/11. Because it's the Clintonistas who gutted the country of Russia and their economy in the 90s. And once you understand that, I mean, Hillary's hypocrisy in that regard is just patently absurd. It's like blatant, right? That's who ruined the country and their economy through the IMF, which is what the IMF does in every country. But anyway, so what the danger here is that Hillary is openly anti-Russian and talks about the war hawk need for some sort of regional conflict with Russia. I don't think that we're going to see a World War III. I'm not worried about that because there's too many, I think, Fortune 100 interests across the globe that would suffer from some actual giant world war. But I think we can see regional conflicts. Syria is one of those regional conflicts. Ukraine was one of those regional conflicts that was all at the behest of the State Department and the designs of the Pentagon. And as we've said many times, clash of civilizations. So Hillary represents a neocon. She represents that Trotskyite ideology of terror of, and this is where modern terrorism comes from, is from Trotskyism. It comes from red terror in the sense of Trotsky, not so much Stalin, but more so the Trotskyite neoconservatives, Bill Kristol and so forth, right? That's who runs our government, and that's the dominant ideology that now even the Democrats have adopted. I'm not saying Democrats are good, but you'll notice the foreign policy of Hillary, of Obama, no different than the neocons. So that's who
runs
things. Yeah, they run things in the U.S.
They've truly actually teamed up now together, which is truly remarkable, you know. But Hillary blames or you know, puts all this attention on Trump for these relationships supposedly with Russia, right? All the hacking, the DNC emails, even WikiLeaks now is dragged into it because they no longer are solely attacking on a progressive kind of foundation. They're actually attacking, you know, to the left now, if you will. But a very interesting story that came out in 2015, actually about real connections between the Clintons, through the Clinton Foundation and Russia, which I found very, very curious. It's about the uranium deal, you know, which we can speculate ad infinitum in terms of why they would do something like this. I don't know if this is, you know, nuclear weapons grade uranium or what this really is, but the bare bones of the story is basically that a Canadian company called Uranium One, you know, actually controls a great deal of uranium production in the U.S., was sold to Russia. And so Putin, if you will, then now actually controls 20% of U.S. uranium production. And it was actually Hillary that oversaw and made sure that this deal went through. So while she's blaming Trump, you know, for all these, you know, backdoor conspiracies or whatever, she's actually the ones that are involved in doing this. Amazing, isn't it?
Yes. And that story, I think, ties into, I'm not fully clear what I think about the whole history of the nuke networks and all this, but what I can gather from Carol Quigley, who treats it at length in his book from the CFR archives, is that basically after World War II, the whole basis, the entire auspices under which the UN was established was for global nuclear security. Now, Quigley says a lot of strange things that don't make sense as to how there's this rogue black network of nukes out there. I think a lot of that is psychological warfare that was used in the Cold War to hype everybody up into thinking that there's this giant super weapon that's going to kill you. There's a lot of Hollywood that was tied into that. In fact, Quigley has several sections where he says that from the 1945 to 50 period, most of the atomic red spy stories were made up by Hollywood. And this served the agenda of Hoover and the FBI. And he says there are only two cases, the Venona situation and the Klaus Fuchs story, that had any truth to them. So I'm not sure that I buy into a lot of the Cold War stories about nukes. And that's the background to all of what you're talking about with Russia and these backdoor deals. And I don't know that we are ever going to really know for certain what's going on, because this is, of course, always classified as top, top, top secret stuff. But if you look at the AQCon network and what this is supposed to be with the CIA making deals with him and the nukes and so forth, I would suggest that it's very similar to the way that the black market drug and arms networks work in general. And that's most of the time run by the CIA, because, you know, as Brzezinski talks about this, there's a great book actually that I've been reading recently, The Politics of Heroin, by Alfred McCloy, The CIA Complicity in the Global Drug Trade. And this is just a giant resource for documenting the history of how black markets work. So what you're talking about with, the reason I say that is that what you're talking about with nukes is the exact same, this so-called nuclear black network that's out there. Now, what your article shows is the same thing that even Lou Dobbs did a report about 10 years ago, I think on CNN it was mentioned. You might be able to dig this up still on YouTube. It may be pulled, I don't know. But Dobbs did a report that when it came to Iran and their nuclear technology, this was a cooperative deal that the U.S. Atomic Energy Commission with Russia did to help establish Iran's nuclear program. So if that's true, and it looks to be so, then I don't think that there is a real threat of nuclear war from Russia or Iran, because these are done to whatever degree this is real. Whatever it is, it's done at a global level. So I don't think that, in other words, I'm just saying that I wouldn't worry about nuclear war or World War III in that sense.
There's no, we shouldn't derail this into a conversation where, like, they're actually seeking to arm Russia on some level, Putin is in on it, and we're going to get a nuclear war here in you know, a few months or something.
I don't think that there's going to be a World War III anytime soon, no.
Yeah.
But what I do think is dangerous is regional conflicts, and that's what we're seeing in Syria, and we will see more of that, especially if we get Hillary. And I think that you know, obviously what politicians say in their rhetoric most of the time doesn't match up to what they actually do. So I'm skeptical about American politics in general, but I do like what much of what Trump says. I think it's almost like Trump's a kind of revelation of the method, if you will, regardless
sure.
of yeah. whether he's sincere or not. It's like he's there to actually say how this all really works, because he'll say, you know, the Clinton Foundation is a scam that receives money for, you know, for consultation from Bahrain and these different Gulf states. The Clinton Foundation is there to launder money. You know, he'll talk about Hillary's. But Hillary is basically a big scam. And I don't think that Hillary's at the top of the pyramid, but she was brought into power by the Rockefellers. She was worked with the CIA when she was in college. She probably is CIA at some level. You know, she's at the State Department running things at a certain level. Benghazi, the destruction of Libya. And so I think what's the most telling aspect of this, and we look at mainstream media, is that they will make a huge deal out of Trump's locker room conversations. And they won't make any deal about Hillary literally destroying nations.
It's so agonizing.
It's so hypocritical.
My God. Yeah.
And just ridiculous and disgusting. And that's the blindness, I think, of the people in this country, and stupidity, is that they can't see. It's, I think, what was a Kurt Vonnegut or somebody made the point that, you know, people would make a big deal about soldiers painting a cuss word on their tank or something, and they wouldn't care about the fact that the tank kills millions of
right.
people or something.
Yeah.
And that basic point is applicable here, that who's the real scumbag here? It's not Trump. I mean, they're having to grasp at straws to find anything on him.
10 years ago, you know, 15 years
ago. Conversation where he said, pussy. I mean, give me a break.
Yeah.
Hillary is like infinitely more evil. And
he's murdering people, you know, and from the Vince Fosters to the Benghazis to like arming ISIS. And I mean, you remember the clip, Jay, but let me play it anyway. You remember it.
We also have a history of kind of moving in and out of Pakistan. I mean, let's remember here, the people we are fighting today, we funded 20 years ago. And we did it because we were locked in this struggle with the Soviet Union. They invaded Afghanistan, and we did not want to see them control Central Asia. And we went to work. And it was President Reagan, in partnership with the Congress, led by Democrats, who said, you know what, sounds like a pretty good idea. Let's deal with the ISI and the Pakistani military, and let's go recruit these Mujahideen, and that's great. Let's get some to come from Saudi Arabia and other places, importing their Wahhabi brand of Islam, so that we can go beat the Soviet Union. And guess what? They retreated. They lost billions of dollars, and it led to the collapse of the Soviet Union. So there's a very strong argument, which is, wasn't a bad investment to end the Soviet Union, but let's be careful what we sow, because we will harvest.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know the story. You know about this, and it's you know, in some instances, you can give them the benefit of the doubt over the fact that it's not every instance, you know, by Al-Qaeda and ISIS from now on that's going to be planned operations and all these kinds of things. But we have to return to the main point, which is if these forces weren't meddling in the region in the way that they have, this would never have been to the extent that it has is grown out. Something like ISIS, for example, and their infiltration into Europe. Fact that they're funding and arming these people, and they created the vacuum that also allowed for this to happen.
Yes. What's amazing is that I think just in the past couple of days, one of the emails involves Hillary discussing the covert funding of al-Nusra and ISIS. So what does this email say? It says everything that we've been saying for years now, that it's the exact same model that goes back to the creation of the Mujahideen and the usage of Al-Qaeda by CIA, and it's no different. So what Hillary's saying there about 20 years ago or whatever, 30 years ago, that's what she's doing now. And the emails say, the covert funding comes through the Gulf states, Saudi Arabia and so forth, Qatar. Well, those are proxies of the U.S. They're BFFs with the U.S. and have been forever.
Right.
I mean,
yeah.
It's all transparent. She was there during the whole Benghazi fiasco. The whole purpose of Benghazi was to funnel weapons to the mercenaries. They're not, you know, they're not ISIS, they're not a state. They're not an, they're a total creation of the CIA. That's why all the propaganda videos were created by Western intelligence / PR firms, Bell Pottinger and so forth. It all comes out of the site intelligence, Israeli intelligence networks, Rita Katz. So it's all, this is all patently obvious. I don't know why it's so difficult to figure out, but you know, everybody's just under this sort of malaise and dream state, sort of waking dream state. But yes, it's
let's talk.
I love the fact that Hillary brought that. That Trump brought that out about Hillary in the debate. That was really surprising.
Phenomenal.
I didn't expect Trump to go there, but he did.
I didn't expect him to be so blunt. I mean, let's be honest. There's much more that he can say still. You know, you have the whole Epstein thing and all that. You know, that whole thing, which he seems to be on some level, you know, kind of drawn into as well, which is of course kind of a worrying element, but. I think there was a shift in the debate when she started attacking him on the locker room talk and his comments about pussy or whatever. And he actually said what you said. He said, these are just words. You know, your actions have like led to all these, you know, murderers, basically. She's a murderer, you know, indirectly and directly, I'd say as well.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's phenomenal that he managed to get this out. I think for the first time we've seen a presidential debate in a race which is not as managed as we're used to when it comes to American politics, the contrived version of American politics, you know?
Yeah, I'd like to rant a little bit, too, about the limp-wristed, faggot evangelical jellyfish in this country who will go off on Trump and make some big deal about some comment that he's made under the guise of their pietistic morality. These people are pathetic, and many of them actually are pedophiles and gay, and they are co-opted, and that's why we see, for example, Glenn Beck saying that we've got to support Hillary, right? Now, I'm not saying that that means that Trump is legit. I don't know, and I don't really care. I'll never know, you know, Trump's intentions or whatever. I'm not that concerned about it anyway, but what I am interested in is the reactions and actions of people for these kind of bellwethers that are out there like Trump. And what you see with all these Zionist evangelicals, the most ridiculous aspect of this is that these countries where Hillary is complicit in the destruction of, you know, including Syria, Libya, these are places where there are actual Christians, right?
That's
now,
right. Yeah.
Regardless of what you think about Christianity, what is so stupid and hypocritical about evangelicals is that they will support these kinds of neoconservative actions that destroy Christians when they claim to be Christians, but they're not, right? Because they buy into this stupid heresy of millennialism and Zionism, right? As if that's what Christianity is supposed to be about. That's a completely new doctrine from the late 1800s with Scofield and Darby and all that. I've talked about this for over 10 years, but anyway, maybe that's a side issue. But the point here is that
it's an important issue though, Jay, because it's at the heart of how many of these people have been managed to be convinced, you know?
Millions of people in the U.S., all these stupid Baptists, all these ridiculous evangelicals who will support the idea of God choosing Israel and that the modern secular state of Israel is somehow what the Bible's talking about, as opposed to what the historic belief of Christianity is up until the year 1890. All the churches up until 1890, right, who are suddenly, through these weird cults like the Plymouth Brethren, infiltrated with this new ideology of Zionism and John Nelson Darby and the Scofield Bible, and it suddenly posits this new relationship for the state of Israel, right, which is interesting because the state of Israel hadn't come into existence yet, but it's almost like we know that, you know, the Balfour Declaration, the Rothschilds and others were actually planning this, even at that early day. We look at Moses Hess, the way he talked about the establishment of a socialist Zionist state. And so this is a complete concoction of the Atlanticist establishment, I believe. And it functions as an outpost for geopolitical reasons. And that's why you'll see these money-hawking premillennial pastors like Tim LaHaye or John Hagee. What do they do? Look at their slew of ridiculous books that they put out. Who do they say the enemy is? The enemy is places like Syria. Now, back in the 90s, who were they saying the enemy was? Oh, Saddam. Saddam is predicted in the book of Revelation. This is like the beast and stuff, right?
Because it's Magog and Gog and all that stuff, right?
Yeah. Now, so that all that nonsense changed nowadays. It's Gog and Magog are Russia, right?
That's right.
Russia is the great beast that's prophesied in the book. That's all geopolitical scam nonsense. It's all just made up for political reasons. And that's why you see these characters like Hagee and so obviously they're functionaries of the secular state of Israel, which makes absolutely no sense if you believe that there's a God, right? Like even if you believe Judaism, like the majority of these people in Israel are atheists. They don't believe in anything, right? It makes no sense, but it doesn't have to make sense because it's all about manipulation. And so the great contradiction here that I want to hammer home is the fact that you have so many evangelicals in the U.S. that will support Hillary over Trump. It's blowing my mind, right? All these faith leaders, as they're called, who I think many of them are closet homosexuals, and they're compromised. And we've seen that come out before. Ted Haggard, like how
exactly.
Many of these pastors.
That's right. He was like doing blow and having like black prostitutes or gay prostitutes or something, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what happens? Well, they're all compromised and they're told what they're gonna go along with the government's foreign policy. And so this is nothing new. The U.S. there've been public articles in I think Washington Times about how the Pentagon wants to use more evangelical missionaries as CIA cover. You can find that in the Washington Times. So they've used U.S. aid in the past. In fact, in terms of there was a whole operation under the Reagan administration where the CIA printed up a whole bunch of Korans, and this was done at the behest of the CIA to import Korans and textbooks into Turkey and Uzbekistan for the purpose of radicalizing existing Muslim population as the destabilization of Russia. This is what led to the Chechnya situation, and that's where Putin fought in the Chechen wars, right? So that, by the way, really good book. This is all detailed in Lost Hegemon, F. William Engdahl's new book. I highly recommend that for understanding these kinds of operations. But that's just another example that we don't hear much about of the CIA utilizing radical Islam. In fact, there's a quote from the CIA Graham Fuller, where he says we've got to use more of the same doctrines of the jihad that can destabilize Russia in the satellite territories. And he was saying that back in the 90s. So this is nothing new. This is the same pattern that's been going on. And you have to understand that Hillary, Obama, and the Bushes, they all represent that same clique of using this strategy. Now, what's great about Trump? Regardless of whether he's real or not, his rhetoric, at least, is against this stuff.
Yeah, that's what's his amazing carelessness, if you will, or whatever, whether he's aware of it or not, he's actually spilling the beans on a lot of this stuff, which is absolutely remarkable. And I'm surprised that they're allowing it to go on for this amount of time, to be honest. And he needs to watch his back, you know. But what you're talking about here, Jay, you know, is obviously. Well, there's two folds to this. One is that we have not seen the level of, as far as I'm aware, of immigration and Muslim immigration into Russia that we've seen into Europe and also beginning now into America as well. It seems at this point that these globalist forces and the internationalists are more concerned with bringing this radical fifth, you know, column element into the Western world as opposed to using that in Russia, right? Has the plan changed in some way, or are they seeking to do something different in Russia?
Well, the destabilization that I was talking about, this was in the satellite regions, Caucasus and so forth, Caspian region, and that was ultimately to get a pipeline put there that was Halliburton. Actually, Dick Cheney went over there back in the 90s to organize an Azerbaijani pipeline. And by the way, just a little side note, this is actually roughly what is the plot of that ridiculous Bond movie in 1998, The World Is Not Enough. If you watch that movie, you'll see that they take the character of her name's Electra King, and the story is played by Sophie Marceau, and she's this Orthodox Christian from Azerbaijan, and she's an oil princess who wants to establish a pipeline, and she's working with Russian terrorists to bomb her own pipelines to make herself look bad. Right? This is the plot of that stupid movie. Now, what's the reality here? Well, actually, in this chapter in Ingdahl's book, it actually describes what is apparently the reality behind the plot of that movie. And the reality is that the CIA was bombing Russian pipelines in that region through these jihadi proxies, through these Chechen terrorists, radicalized by CIA textbooks and translations of the Quran. And this allowed for the creation of the Halliburton pipeline through the U.S.-Azerbaijan Chamber of Commerce meeting. And this pipeline would be called the Baku-Tbilisi-Chechen BTC oil pipeline. And that would mean that the Russian pipeline would no longer be used. So that's what that was all about. And who was behind this? General Secord of Iran, Contra fame, and Dick Cheney, Zbigniew Brzezinski, and Kissinger. They were all there organizing this operation back in the 90s. So that is the model for what we see everywhere. It's the same thing. It's the same pattern. I'm not saying that it's all about oil. It's not all about oil. It's also about what you're saying, the movement of migrations of populations, because that's demographic warfare. Just like there's economic warfare, just like there's battlefield warfare, there's info warfare, there's also migratory population warfare. So now it's not very easy to import a lot of people into Russia because Russia is the biggest country in the world. And other countries, unlike what we're supposed to have in the West, other countries have borders.
That's right. Yeah.
We're not supposed to have that in the evil West, right? If you're, you know, that's evil. But China, Japan, Mexico, they all have these strict border rules. They're good. Only the U.S., Europe cannot have borders. That's how obvious is that? As that it's a plan, a destruction plan.
Yeah.
It's obvious. Right? So the plan is not, the plan is going according to plan in the Western nations because they want to have no borders. That was one of the leaks of Hillary the past couple of days. He wants total gun ban and no borders, I believe is what it was.
Yeah, that's right. Open borders. Yep.
Now,
no guns, free market, globalism.
Like, how do we, this should be obvious by now.
But yeah.
So I don't think that migration into Russia is very effective, although there have been movements of Islamists into Russia in the past few decades. And I think that was part of this plan.
Yeah. Well, again, we saw the consequences of this, of course, in Bosnia and Kosovo and that whole conflict bloom out. We saw what side, if you will, the globalists picked. It's not what we've been told in terms of the fact that, well, America is there to protect, you know, Christians or anything. It's absolutely to the contrary, you know. But there's elements here then of what is beginning to happen now. Actually, one of the things I wanted to make sure that we talk about is what you briefly touched upon, it because this is a very important point in terms of the videos and everything else, the Al-Qaeda videos. And you know, I'm still of the belief that through a radicalization process, they've kickstarted something which is basically running on its own. Now, I'm not sure where I stand on this issue. Would there have been radical Islam if these forces we're talking about stayed out of it? That might very well be the case. I'm not too sure, but it wouldn't be that prominent as it is now. But let's talk about that specifically. How Pentagon paid, this British company. And we can actually watch the clip here, Jace. We can let the audience see what actually is going on here. So let's listen into, here we go.
I got a phone call from my agency, who I worked with and got lots of work from, saying, would you like to work abroad? The address I was given was in central London. I went into the building, up to the sixth floor, and there were guards on the sixth floor, which I thought was quite odd. And it turned out to be a military media kind of intelligence unit. And they showed me around. We had a quick chat, and I must have been there for about 20 minutes, and that was it. They said, right, great to see you, thanks very much. And I asked, okay, so when will I hear if I've got the job? And I said, oh, no, you've got it. Your tickets will be emailed to you later today. You'll be going out on Monday morning. Oh, you're going to Baghdad. I was expecting to be in the Green Zone. But no, we were on a base called Camp Victory. So when I first started working on it, I didn't know how big a project this was. And I just assumed it was news gathering. But having seen the process and worked in the process, I then realized this was a big project. And the budget was large as well. It was around about $120 million a year.
Wow, a lot of money.
While I was working there were three different types of strand, really. So we would do the news items that would go out on the news and go out on various channels locally. The kind of stories, a bomb would go off, a car bomb would go off, people would die, we would have people out there filming it, it would come back, we would then edit it into stories that would then go out on various channels within the region. Which it is shot locally and it is edited locally. It was more to make it look like it was Arabic, to make it look like it was shot in the region, which it was, but to make it look like it was created by Arabic TV almost. And then there were what they call TVCs, which are television commercials, say Al-Qaeda are bad. There would also be things called VCDs, which we would make. The Wales approach about VCDs was, I was asked by my boss, we need to make this style of video, and we've got to use Al-Qaeda's footage and all their propaganda out there to do it. We need it to be 10 minutes long, and it needs to be in this file format, and we need to encode it in this manner. And yeah, that's great. And we're going to track it via Google Analytics. All the VCDs that were made, and quite a considerable amount, were taken by Marines when they were going into various villages or they were doing raids, whatever patrols they were on, and they were dispersed that way. If they're raiding a house and they're going to make a mess of it looking for stuff anyway, they just drop an odd VCD there. Then when whoever comes back, they're going to pick it up and they're going to start checking stuff through. These were discs that were made to play in a thing called Real Player. And what happened to a Real Player is you'd get a white screen before anything would happen. They came up with this ingenious idea that within the white flash that Real Player does, it actually tracks where the VCD is being played. Because Real Player has to connect online to run.
Is that, let me just pause there for a second. I just always find these things so fascinating. I've heard other stories like this, and these $100 million a year budgeted projects end up using like Real Player and Google Analytics. I thought it would be more. Maybe they develop their own systems or do something, but this is always a curious faction. I don't know if it's just because they're just kind of incompetent overall to a certain extent, but I just find it hilarious, Jay, in terms of like how basic it seems to be that some of these projects that they're involved in.
Well, there's probably a lot of theft involved in this, too. I mean, in other words, a lot of that money probably doesn't go to this.
Exactly, that's a good point.
It shouldn't take $100 million, $500 million to produce these really cheap.
That's just it. Where's all this money going? Exactly, that's a good point. It has to be something else. Bell Pottinger, maybe. I know a little bit about Timothy Bell, or the Baron Tim Bell. I can't remember right now what it was he was involved in, but I know that there's a lot of corruption in some of the things that he's been involved in, you know, British businessman. Let's listen a bit more to the video here.
That little bit of code would then be connected to a Google Analytics account. And so that way, you could have a track and know where that VCD is being played. So when the VCDs have been delivered, when they're watched, and the tracking kicks, it makes a hit with analytics. And when you log into it, 24 hours later, it will tell you which IP address and where in the world it's been looked at. So, for instance, if one's looked at in the middle of Baghdad, okay, you know there's a hit there. If one 48 hours later or a week later shows up in another part of the world, then that's the more interesting one. And that's what they're looking for more. So someone sent it to this person or they've been here and they've gone elsewhere. So it gives you a track of somebody who could possibly be a threat. Some of the VCDs ended up in some interesting countries. I think I had a couple in Iran, obviously in Iraq, in several places. I think there was one in Syria, but the most interesting one was in America. No idea how it got there, but all my job was to do was to collate that data and pass it on. When we made something, the process would be, I would show it to my producer, they'd be happy with it. We would then get in seniors in the office, they'd be happy with it. Then we get the two colonels in to look at it, look at the things we've done throughout the day. They'd be fine with it. It would then go to General Petraeus. He would then look at it and his team would look at it, and if they're happy with it, it would then go on up the line if it needed to. If he couldn't sign off on it, it would go up on the line to the White House, and then it was signed off up there, and the answer would come back down the line. I was in and out of Baghdad on this contract for over a year or so. I just couldn't do it any longer. You just think flying in and out of a war zone all the time, you're elevating that risk of not being able to come back home.
All right, so obviously this, though, doesn't imply that every single video that Al-Qaeda has ever made is fake, obviously. But there has been other ones which are quite interesting. You remember, Jay, this one out of apparently also Russian hackers was actually blamed for this one, right, that they had somehow released this video that seems to suggest that, one of these classic, videos of ISIS beheading is released. I don't know if you... what you thought of this one, Jay, and if we should be under the impression that all of them are fake just because we have some of these this insight coming out. What do you think?
Well, I think if you look at the attacks of al-Nusra in Syria, that's all real. You can find hours of that on YouTube. YouTube doesn't pull any of those videos. Al-Nusra is just mercenaries. Okay, so a lot of these people, they're not necessarily jihadis. They're people who don't have any, the country's been destroyed. They're offered food, lodging, right? A paycheck if you are a mercenary. And I've talked to soldiers who've been in Afghanistan, who've been to these places, and they'll say some days the guys that we were training would switch over to the other side because the paycheck was better. So it's not what you're told in the media, okay? It's just it's a lot of this is just mercenaries, and it's people that, who've been propagandized, again, by this CIA-type propaganda with Wahhabism and so forth that's run out of the countries that are the proxies and allies of the U.S., like Qatar, United Arab Emirates, Saudi Arabia, Turkey, right? Those are the locales by which a lot of this is coordinated. But no, I don't think any of these ISIS videos are real. Every one of them is fake. I've been saying that since the beginning. I wrote articles back in 2014, as well as Sean Helton wrote several more at 21st Century Wire. I think it's at the behest of the person who's arguing to me that these are real to prove that they're real if the majority of them come out as fake. We know that the CIA and the Washington Post admitted staging bin Laden videos back in the early 2000s after 2001 under the guise of fighting the war on terror. So, again, if you want to see real footage, look at the attacks of in Aleppo by al-Nusra, which are all over YouTube, and you watch hours of that. That's real. But these propaganda videos are not real. That's my view.
Yeah, it's interesting, because there's we can kind of select, if you will, in terms of what we see coming out of the region. And again, I mean, my stance on this. It doesn't mean that there isn't a problem with Islam at this point in the West, and these conflicts are, of course, artificially created, and we could be in a situation where we have be much better off in terms of our relationship with our our neighbors in different parts of the world or whatever. But right now, it's creating utter chaos, all around the West. And people have to remember that this is one of the incentives. We're not here to fix this situation, or they are not there to fix this situation or try to repair it. The more they get involved and the more they try to do, the more budgets they have, the more money they have, it's just going to get worse and worse and worse, right?
Again, I don't believe there's a lot of rogue states out there. If you read Tragedy and Hope by Carol Quigley, he'll talk about how once World War II happened and the globe was restructured by the UN, via the Bretton Woods system and so forth, you have great powers. Okay, you have a multipolar world at that time of the USS and the Soviet Union, which in many ways was a contrived dialectic. And the Western Atlantis' banking establishment pretty much had the upper hand. So I don't believe that there's all these rogue states out there. And now there are countries that are still being mopped up, okay, and the problem with those countries like Iran or Syria or Russia is not even the political class, because I would agree with Alexander Dugin when he pointed out that about Russia. It was in the hour two interview that he did with you. He said, if you look at Russia, there's a fifth column of the political class that are totally in bed with the Western globalists. And I don't think there's any question about that. But what's the target here? The target of these countries is the people. It's the people in Syria that are the problem. It's the people in Russia that are the problem, many of whom are Orthodox Christians. It's the U.S. population is the target of all the psychological operations and the toxic culture and the Hollywood and so forth. That's the problem for the globalists. The populations in Europe are the problem. They have to be hit with all the full-spectrum dominance, psychological warfare. So when you look at Islam, I believe that all of the networks that would constitute what makes up radical Islam, okay, that might be run through places like Saudi Arabia or Turkey or Qatar or United Arab Emirates, Gulf States, so forth, those entities, those networks have not been rogue. Okay, there might be people at times who are rogue, but they have been since the time of the British Empire and the fall of the Ottoman Empire. They've been run by the West, for all intents and purposes, the Western intelligence agencies. They've not been, they're not their own power. Maybe one day they could be, I don't know. But I don't think that at this point they are, especially if you look at the rise of Islamic banking. That's all at the behest of the Western banking establishment allowing that. Okay, you would not have had the rise of Islamic banking, if you look at Robert Dreyfus's book, A Devil's Game, without the allowance of the Western banking establishment allowing it. And when you consider the fact that we already live under a global currency with the dollar as the world reserve, and the fact that the CIA and the Western intelligence agencies run these black markets, it's not possible with the NSA surveillance and what they can do to have all of these rogue networks that are operating outside of the allowance of the Western establishment. I think that's what's key to understand. And that's why many of the Russian philosophers, Dugin and others, even people at the CFR have said maybe we need to start moving towards a multipolar world instead of a unipolar world of the neoconservative dominance that's coming out of the U.S. and the State Department. So we live in a unipolar world right now. And that's why these other countries have to be mopped up so that there's no possibility for a bipolar or multipolar world. This is what Brzezinski talks about, and he says why you have to control Eurasia.
All right, very good point, Jay. We're going to take a break in a little bit. We have much more to discuss in terms of, you know, the U.S. cutting diplomatic ties with Russia a while back. We need to get into a little bit more about the white helmets and some of these things and kind of break that down for people. But just tell us a bit about your book, Jay, Esoteric Hollywood. Is it out right now?
I believe we're looking at a month or two to be actually delivered. And so the book is completely 100% done on my end. So what happened was I wrote about 360-something pages or so, and the publisher felt like there was a lot of terms and ideas and philosophical concepts, esoteric concepts, geopolitical ideas even, that I discussed that maybe a mass audience wouldn't be familiar with. So what I did was I went back and I wrote about 40 or 50 pages more of what are called sidebars, which are just these little explanatory sections that define whatever I'm talking about that might be obscure. So, you know, it might be all the MKUltra doctors are defined. It might be the idea of what Kabbalah is and why this is important in Hollywood and movies. It might be philosophical concepts from Plato. All of that has been added, so you're getting, excuse me, about another 40 or 50 pages on top of the 360 or 70 pages. So over 400 pages, 404 footnotes, not counting all the sidebars. So it's immensely researched, immensely documented. And what the book is basically looking at films, because people don't care about news per se or history or books. They're going to watch movies. So what I do is I deconstruct these big time films and I point out what the geopolitics undergirding it is, what the philosophy is, what the esoteric meaning might be, what the propaganda is, right? And so I try to do this with these big, big films. I look at Spielberg films and how he's promoted a lot of the cultural Marxism and how he's promoted things like the alien mythology, which I think is a bunch of nonsense. I look at the history of H.G. Wells and how he was a Mason and how a lot of his science fiction was actually engineered to produce a lot of the nonsense that we believe in today, including aliens and so forth. I look at the 007 films, Hitchcock films, how Hitchcock films were studied as a means of psychological warfare and inducing trauma into audiences. We see that with Psycho and entities like the Tavistock Institute perfecting these kinds of techniques. So it's all of that. I look at Kubrick films. I go into the philosophy of Kubrick's film. If you've seen Jay Wiedner's stuff, it's very what I did with the Kubrick sections is similar to that, although I kind of have some disagreements with Wiedner. But overall, I like Jay Wiedner's stuff. I look at Eyes Wide Shut, and I said, look, this is the kind of occult elite, political elite that we actually live under. So there's a lot of reality in these films that can be deconstructed. And then I look at the tie-ins of CIA and Hollywood. Now, there's a lot of cooperation and cross-pollination there, cross-coordination, that ties actually into what we're talking about. Because when we look at these NGOs and Avaz, and when we look at these Dust Boy propaganda videos, this is all using the techniques of Hollywood. And so what does Hollywood do? It comes along and it gives us the narrative, the propaganda narrative, in these big CIA movies like Zero Dark Thirty or American Sniper, right? This is the propaganda that backs up the mass media storyline, right? Which is actually scripted. I think a lot of these mass media stories are scripted.
Well, that's what they said, right? The best way to control the future is to actually create it. You know, manage your enemies, manage everything, and you got it under control. And then, as I said, of course, within that, you have an extreme situation that has completely kind of, derailed, where you have a lot of people that are actually attracted to these, funded and constructed organizations and groups and agendas and everything else. And people genuinely believe that they're doing something good for the same thing that you're, you know, joining a sports team or something like that, you know. It's appealing to those kind of primal impulses, and they're manipulating us in very, very, very sophisticated ways. Okay.
Yeah, the humanitarian cover is one of the great covers that the establishment uses to foist some foreign policy agenda or regime change or social engineering, actually. And so the history of cults, which I talk about a lot in my book, was, I think, the CIA, for example, was very interested in and involved in cults. And the reason for that is that you could learn how to manipulate masses of audiences and masses of people through cult techniques. And so actually what we live in now is kind of a giant cult.
That's right.
America is a kind of cult where people are so tied to just blind patriotism and support the troops and all this nonsense. They don't have any conception of what's actually going on. Support the troops actually means supporting mercenary jihad, which is ridiculous.
All right, very good. So, once again, Esoteric Hollywood is the book, and, of course, it's available through jaceanalysis.com, and that will take you to
Amazon.
Yeah, that will take you to Trine Day as well, a good publisher. They release a lot of good stuff. Actually, there it is, Trine Day. Okay, well, let's take a break here, ladies and gentlemen, and Jace, stay with us. We'll be right back. We'll continue and discuss this and many more interesting topics right ahead. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Go on, the show must go on, to answer all the clamor for oop and glamour and so on. To captivate Tom, Dick, and Harry, each Matilda, Kate, and Carrie, Cleopatra, and Newberry puts her show on. Way back in history, old Adam didn't give a care. There was no mystery, a rag about a hank of hair. But since humanity discovered vanity, we only know the show must go on. Could probably go on forever. But all we're saying is what you know. That glamour is a woman's show. The show most people like to view is evidence in verdicue. The show must go on. The show must go on. The show must go on. To answer all the glamour, who the glamour and so on. But since humanity discovered but the show we show is different because we don't depend on this nor this for a cause. That sort of thing we scornfully dismiss for this. We'll be right back.
Join us in the second hour, everyone. RedIceMembers.com. Sign up for a membership with us if you haven't already. Get the full shows, see our live TV show, and all the other material that we've produced since 2006. Stay tuned as we talk more about the U.S. presidential election, Trump, Hillary, Syria, and the origins and founding of the White Helmets with Jay Dyer. We'll be right back.